life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain.
You are listening to Dynamite in the Brain with Brian Smith and Anthony Askew. On tonight's episode, we are joined by returning Dirty Pair correspondent Gary Hedges to discuss Volume 2 of the Dirty Pair TV series release from Nozomi Entertainment. Hello, Gary.
Hello, Brian. Hello, Anthony.
Hello.
And very much returning, because we have recorded this podcast once already, but it is lost on a computer that died. And is
who knows, maybe it'll surface in a few years' time as a director's cut.
Who knows, yes. So, 3 weeks since we watched these episodes, we're now going to try and remember what happened in these episodes and how much we liked them or not.
Yep.
And then we're going to do a quiz where they've already done the quiz, so then it'll be a battle.
Oh, this is unfair, because if I lose this quiz...
I didn't make a note of the answers, I'm not like that.
I think I remember. But I remember what you chose, Gary.
I get my perfect inverted score.
Yes, you got a perfect inverted score last time. But okay, so TV series, List of Dirty Pair episodes... Okay, here we go. Let's crack on. Volume 2 opens up with episode 14, The Vault or the Vote, A Murderous Day for a Speech, in which an assassin who is a master of disguise is hired to eliminate the past of a political candidate. So what's happening here is there's two political candidates coming into 3WA headquarters to make some speeches. And also, meanwhile, this is the one day a year or something when they open up their physical data vaults for maintenance. And so this assassin has been sent in to break into the vault at this particular time, and it turns out to eliminate the criminal past of one of these candidates.
Yes, I recall this one.
And so,
I remember the vault.
Yeah. The pair don't really work together in the kind of, like, working independently of each other. They've got different plans on, which is a recurring theme, I think, through a number of these episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is probably a bit better. I think there is a bit more of Yuri getting to be her own woman rather than just Kay's sidekick like she was through a lot of the first 13 episodes in this half. I definitely had less sense that Kay is the main character.
Which I'm pleased about.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah, I can't like being even split.
You're a Yuri fan, aren't you?
That's yeah, I mean, I don't even think we need a 50-50 split. I think Kay needs to be there, but, you know, if she's just there, that's fine. I'm not super down on Kay. She's great as well.
Yeah, I used to be of the same opinion, but no, I've completely flipped as to which one's my favourite character now.
What changed?
I grew up. The
catalyst?
What do you mean you grew up?
I'm 30!
He wanted a strong woman, not a cute woman.
Yuri's strong. They're both strong.
This is true. They are both strong. I like them both, so I'm not going to pick.
So they have to, like, two of them end up getting trapped. The assassin and is it Kay?
Kay. It's Kay that gets trapped.
Gets trapped in the thing, and then they start hallucinating because of the defense system. You think it's a gas, but actually they're hallucinating the gas. And
that's right. And that baffled me last time because I was like, "Oh, it's a gas," and you're like, "No."
No, because you then get a shot of what they're viewing from the monitoring. Station, and you're just seeing them behave like they're being gassed.
That's right.
And there's a couple of egregious racial stereotypes. There's the recurring one of the Chinese chef, and then there's a really egregious black guy, the way he's drawn.
Mm-hmm.
When you think, no, when other black guys show up in this series, they're not drawn in that racist manner. So it's clearly just a racist animator at work that day. As I'm learning all about how animation works from watching Late Night, The Genius Bacabon, as they did an episode this week where there was a storm of bad animation on the way, and they kind of went through all the different ways an anime episode breaks down. So you might get things which look good, but they look completely out of character because the animator's just decided he's going to draw it the way he wants. Or there's scenes where the human characters look awful, but the weapons and the mechas all look great.
Looks sweet, yeah. Who oversees that? Because I'd imagine there's a lot of work that goes into that for someone to then say,
I believe
actually,
it should be the animation director, but normally it's because they've got a schedule crunch.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So they have to generally bring loads of people on board as quickly as possible to get the episode out the door.
And they just do whatever they like.
Chaos ensues.
Explain some of the later episodes.
Yes, yeah. You definitely see the crunch happening on some of these episodes. Particularly towards the end. Where you go, I can now see why they sort of ended it two episodes early, because I wonder whether those last two episodes were even finished at the time. Maybe that was the reason they were like, okay, let's just cut our losses. We'll stop here and we'll get those two episodes out later as OVAs. Yeah, but story-wise, it was fine. You could kind of tell where it was going from the opening scene. It was like, oh yeah, it's to get rid of his past, not to actually kill a person. And hadn't he murdered somebody? Was that the crime he'd committed? He was like a con man who was covering his past. And
I think I can't remember any specifics.
If it was murder, or if it was just shady business dealings, or
not one of the best episodes. Maybe my least favourite one of the set. But then we get episode 15. Dig here, meow meow. Happiness comes at the end, in which the Dirty Pair are on holiday and they end up teaming up with a old treasure hunter who needs some help finding this treasure before his old assistant, who's abandoned him and stolen the treasure map, gets to it first. And it basically feels like we went to see Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and we came back and made this episode.
Definitely had that vibe. Especially scene at the vault, in the vault at the end with the three-person puzzle.
Oh, yeah, the DDR situation where they invent DDR in 1986.
I would have cracked all of those puzzles. If you ever see me in an escape room, it's like I already know all the tricks.
Have you been in an escape room, Anthony?
I have. I'm here, aren't I?
That's the sign you're up to the Crystal Maze.
I've done one, and I was rather impressed. I've played a lot of escape room, like, DS puzzles and stuff like that. I always do well.
Yeah, that's all they were hiring in York. I got an email a few months back.
For escape rooms?
Yeah, for running escape rooms. There's a company going around setting up them.
I think you could do that, you know, Brian.
I'm too
you
old
know,
now
do
to do
nah,
it.
Nah, I mean, just organise, plan one.
When I saw it, I was like, it's 10 years too late for me.
who invented the escape, or who brought it to a popular audience?
Yeah,
it's a really thing to a degree, isn't it? Sorry to digress off Dirty Pair, but
well, it ties into some stuff in this.
It does.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I first heard about them when they would do like the event ones for Detective Conan in Japan because it would come up.
It must have been easy, though. Because it had been for kids.
But apparently, Real Escape Game was developed by 35-year-old Takeo Kato of the Kyoto publishing company Scrap Co. in 2007, according to Wikipedia.
Wow.
Yep, that was after the Crystal Maze and Fort Boyard, though.
Yeah, but they're not quite the same as an escape room. They're not. They
yeah,
weren't locking
they have
you in
one
the room.
Focus.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose escape room is so almost like a combination of their puzzles all put together.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Interesting. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm ever interested in doing one.
Honestly, it's so much fun and it's so nerve-wracking because although you know that you're going to get out. You're definitely going to get out, regardless if you do it in the time or not. There's something really like high anxiety about being locked in this room and knowing they're watching you on the outside because they've got like cameras and stuff. Oh. And it's just like, oh, am I looking stupid here? Is this way off the beaten track? And it's just all very fun, and it gets your brain working hard.
Wait, you've done one though, haven't you, Anthony? So you may
have
done.
Yeah, I smoked it.
Yeah, no, but you may have done a good one. I'm sure there's experiences where they don't go as well as planned.
Yeah,
I've seen the episode
true.
Of Bob's Burgers.
What do they do?
Linda's organised like this couples date with, and then they discover that they hate this couple, but they end up getting dragged to an escape room, like last thing at night.
They don't like.
And the guy running it falls asleep, so when they start getting problems, they can't get out. Rats start entering the room.
God. I mean, being with a couple that you don't like is hard enough, because if you don't gel with someone that you're in that room with, it's hard work.
Yeah, I also... there's lots of, like, escape room in a box things you can get now from various board game companies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always like... It feels like there's certain types of puzzle I'm good at, and there's certain types of puzzle I'm useless at. Yeah. And I feel like it could just turn into like an hour of aggravation.
We should get one for HibanaCon.
You buy one. I'm not spending money on doing
it. I know that's the worst thing is it's a one use thing, really, isn't it?
Yeah, there's some where you just end up destroying parts of it. There's other ones where you could pass them off to somebody else after the fact.
Okay.
But I think the ones...
some of them are expensive. Sorry.
Yes. You're looking at a value there.
No, I just scanning. Just scanning. Some of them are pretty cool looking, but...
Just lend you my copy of The Crystal Maze. It'd be fine.
It's a little different. I mean, that's...
It's also missing a piece, yeah.
But at the same time, yes, you wouldn't have to deal with vengeful assistants trying to kill you and steal the treasure. But it turns out at the end there's no treasure. But then it turns out there was treasure, and the old man's just swindled them out of their share.
That was a good twist.
But he gives them a load of flowers.
A load of roses.
Yeah.
Is it roses or
it's
whatever
roses,
they are?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so they're kind of happy with that. Like, I mean... I'm sure they preferred the money, but they get the gesture.
Yeah, they seem to be well paid in their job. And they're quite good at bullying their boss into getting more holidays and more pay. Episode 16, then, is Live It To Us. The 3WA is a wonderful job. In this one, they have to babysit an heiress. And when she goes missing, Kay has to... Pygmalion it up in her place by pretending to be posher than she actually is. And it's kind of a race to find her and bring her back so her uncle doesn't take over the company. And he's the one who sent assassins dressed like the Blues Brothers after them. And so, yeah, Yuri's having to chase her down while Kay's having to discover that living the life of an heiress isn't as exciting and luxurious as she thought it was going to be.
I've got the note, Hitman called Panther, full stop, eye patch, full stop, beret, full stop, bald, full stop.
Okay.
I wish he would show up more, because I like the look of him, and he doesn't even do much in this episode. He just gets a kind of slight introduction to say that he's going to kill the heiress. I don't know. None of you two can remember him, can you?
No, can't remember him.
No,
so I remember he's got an eye patch.
I remember the bits of Kay being the heiress, and I thought those bits were quite funny, especially the bits that she thought she was going to enjoy, like the food, drink, but it has to be sanitized and almost destroyed before she could eat it. And then was it signing loads of autographs or paperwork or something?
Paperwork, yeah.
Yeah, loads of admin to do.
I also remember Yuri bullying a biker gang. Because I think this is an episode which looks really great till about the halfway mark. There's some really great animation, and then it kind of slacks off. Because there's a great shot early on of this biker with his mirror sunglasses and Yuri's hard-ass glare reflected in his glasses. It's like, you've picked the wrong people to hit on here. But yeah, generally a good episode.
Yeah.
Then we've got Come Out, Assassin, where they're in disguise on a commercial space flight. They've got to try and figure out which of the passengers is an assassin. While the space flight is heading towards a black hole because the pilot has committed suicide. And also, they have to deal with... Well, Kay specifically has to deal with the unwanted attentions of pop star Bobbitt Huey.
Creeper, creeper.
He is a creeper.
I forget that name every time. Like, it's you say it and say, who? And then I remember. And I forgot
he was in the earlier episodes, or at least his music was.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, because Kay was a big fan of him, and then she's less of a fan through the episode, but then she's kind of a fan again after he saves her life at the end, which is a bit of a let-off for him being a creep throughout the rest of the episode. But yeah, so if you want to see Yuri dressed as a air steward or Kay dressed as a nun, this is the episode for you.
I think I quite liked this one with the whodunit, although I think it was one of those ones where you watched it and it seemed quite obvious.
Yes.
So when I say the whodunit, it was the character Sundrick, isn't it? There was they were after somebody called Sundrick.
Yes.
Who was the only person that could crack the code to cancel the programming on the space shuttle and stop it heading to the black hole.
Yeah.
And they come up with different means to get him or her to reveal themselves. But it seemed very obvious who Sundrick was.
It was, yes. The red herring is not red enough.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe it's just from watching too many types of these stories that it's like, yeah, the first person to die, but you don't see the body. It's like, well, yeah, then he didn't die, and that was actually the assassin. He doesn't need to decode it in the end because they figure it out from the piece of music. The child on the ship is constantly playing on his recorder.
Oh, yeah.
I think the child was taught it by Sundrick.
No, I don't think so, because I think he just heard it when whoever was typing it in the keypad.
Ah, okay. I must have not twigged on that one.
I think that was it. I don't think Sundrick had any relation to anybody on the ship.
No, he didn't. I think it was the boy that was playing the music was related to the captain or something?
Yeah, could be that. Could be that maybe how he learned it. But then we've got episode 18, Pardoners, Troubles on the Run, so we're coming through. This is an episode based on... I've now forgot. I did write it down again. What is it called? The Clint Eastwood film... Clint Eastwood bus
Unforgiven?
Movie. No, The Gauntlet.
The Gauntlet, that's right. Because yes. I was like, I don't know what The Gauntlet is.
Because I only knew it from the Adult Empire Strikes Back, because I think the bus scene in that is also reminiscent, but it's nowhere near as referencing it as this is. This is like always taking the plot wholesale from it. So they've got to escort a criminal to the local police station while the police... who are at the police station are actually trying to kill him. But it opens with the most... apart from blowing up that planet...
Yep.
This is the most dirty pair they are in the TV anime. Where they end up attacking a man who is not the man they're after and blowing up the entire hotel that he was staying in because he fights back. Because these two crazed women had burst in on him in the bath. And start
pointing. Happened to have a shotgun in the bath.
Yes. So I'm assuming he was also up to no good. But
yeah, I think this was one of my favourite intros because it just starts off literally with a bang and it's just over the top. And all the good stuff you like about Dirty Pair.
Yeah, I think the start is just literally them kicking the door into that guy's bathroom. and so they end up destroying the entire police station by the end by driving a massive truck through it.
Yeah, I think even the climax at the end was pretty awesome. The sort of getting to the police station and realising that the entire police station is in on the corruption and there's just vehicles and police everywhere and it's chaos.
Yeah. So, unlike the Gauntlet, they don't take the bus all the way there, but they swap out into what looked like the giant truck from Secret of Mammo, which is a reference to the duel in Secret of Mammo.
Is that where the things come alive? No.
No, Duel's the Steven Spielberg TV movie where the guy's being pursued by the truck.
Yeah, I thought they were alive.
No, you're thinking of a different film where
Stephen
Carl...
Stephen King?
Yeah, you're thinking of Stephen King.
You're thinking
King
of Transformers.
Yeah, Stephen King, Cars Come Alive.
Yeah. I can't remember.
Maximum Overdrive.
That's it, yeah.
Always get them muddled up. Always.
Yeah, I think you just don't see the driver in the duel, but I think it's accepted. That
that's right. Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, Maximum Overdrive is a comet making vehicles come alive.
That's right.
Want to kill people.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
Because it's a Stephen King story.
Yeah.
Why have one idea when too many ideas will do? Yeah, this great episode, this one.
I think
one of my favourites from the entire series.
Yeah, same. I think it was one of the ones that stuck in my head the most. This sort of weeks on from when we watched it, it's one of the ones I still remember quite well.
I like this, but I wanted it all to be... I know there wouldn't be much substance in it, but I wanted them to be constantly going through this building and kind of just a cross-section of people's lives that they're bursting in on, essentially.
Well, yeah, you got more of that with the one where they're chasing the cat in the first half of the series.
Yeah. I like that, though. I like that.
Where they're constantly, repeatedly ruining that couple's lives.
Oh, God, yeah, the young couple.
Then we've got episode 19, An Unjustified Lover's Grudge, Let Me Love You Without Revenge. This is also pretty high dirty pairness at the start of the episode.
Oh, yes.
When they drop part of their spaceship on a mannequin that a rich man was in love with, and then they're hired to find out who killed the mannequin.
Mm.
And at the start I was like, oh, is this like the guy from Tatami Galaxy where he's going to be super creepy about the mannequin that he's in love with? But it doesn't go quite that far. He's not like a parody of a Mario Taku with like a weird sex fetish. He's
no, in fact, he had weird allergies instead.
Yes, he had nonsensical science fiction allergies. Yes, the old anime, I'm allergic to women allergy. Where in his case, it causes his blood sugar to turn to alcohol and he gets drunk when a woman touches him. But he's also hot, and so therefore, rather than find out who did it, because they know who did it, they decide they'll try and seduce him.
Try and cure him. Yeah.
But then part of the way through the episode, the criminals who they were pursuing when they lost past their spaceship, they emerge through the floor of this guy's house in a submarine. And his maid ends up having to save him, and he realizes, oh, he can accept her touch because he was in love with her all along. And so the dirty pair go, phew, now we can admit that we destroyed that mannequin to him. But otherwise, it's a lot of comedy with them being fairly indelicate in their seduction techniques.
Just a touch.
Yes, so then we get episode... I think, oh yeah, also, is this the... I think episode 19 is where they describe him as looking... He's so good-looking, he's like something out of a manga.
No, I don't think...
I think that's the episode.
In my memory, they aren't that interested in him at first.
Oh, no, they're super... I think that's the only one that fits. I know that line's there, and I don't think it goes... Yeah.
I'm trying to think which of the dudes pop up later that could...
The con man, the build, maybe. But I think they say it about this guy.
See, I thought they weren't interested at first, and then when they find out he's kind of allergic, they want to be the one to kind of break him out of his allergy.
No, I know there's a character who they're both into, and I'm pretty sure it's this guy, because the con man is only really Yuri is involved with the con man in the later episode. Because Kay spends the entire episode dressed as men in that one.
Yes.
Anyway, we'll get to that eventually. Episode 20, Nostalgic Blues Make a Killer Soundtrack, where they team up with an assassin who is trying to perform his final hit on the man who murdered his mother, and that man is Colonel Sanders.
Hey, that was definitely in my show notes.
So there's like a Miss Whatever Planet They're On competition who the Dirty Pair are going to try, and they get convinced they should enter by a guy who picks them up when they're hitchhiking on a giant lizard. But he won't admit to saying which one he thinks would win it, or had a better chance to win it, because he knows he's not going to stick his foot in his mouth that way. Yeah. As it turns out, neither of them win it. Is it Kay ends up handcuffed to the assassin with the exploding handcuffs?
Yes, I think she does.
Yeah. And he's going to try and kill the man who murdered his mother, and he ends up doing a noble sacrifice. This guy's also planning on blowing up a casino, which he's going
to trigger. Is that to do with, ruin his business?
Ruin the insurance company's business by making them pay out for the building that he blew up.
Yes, that's it's his casino. He's insured his casino under one insurance company, but he's got loads of shares in their main competitor. So he's going to get money from his casino being blown up and get collecting the insurance on that, and then he'll also get loads of money by the shares in the insurance company he's got shares in going skyrocketing, because they didn't have to make a massive payout on an exploded casino on a planet which is just seemingly just covered in lava.
That's right, of course.
I've got to note that there was a really cool bar fight, and I think, is this the one where the biker gang are in it?
Yes, because the
hired by Melpot, aka Colonel Sanders.
Yes. Or, yeah.
Were they just the biker gang that took an interest in the Dirty Pair? I can't remember.
No, the biker gang took the interest were in the episode 16. This is the gang who are working for Colonel Sanders.
Yeah, these are the proper bad guys.
Yeah.
I remember the bar fight being pretty cool.
And there's a decent amount of tension in, like, oh, is the train going to fall in the lava at the end when...
That whole end piece, I kind of, in my head, remember it thinking it was very James Bond.
Yeah, it's got a bit of Italian Job to the end when the train's, like, tipping over the edge. But no sort of panic of having to run to the other end.
My James Bond thought was more from the over elaborate mechanism, it's not just we're going to put bombs in the hotel, it's that we're going to blow up the volcano and make that hit the hotel, but we're only going to blow up the volcano by having a monorail trip over a switch that right at the end of the monorail line. It was all like very elaborate and very longed out.
The assassin ends up having to cut the handcuffs, the takes the explosive bit is obviously on his hand, and then goes and blows himself up.
It's so super exciting. I was super excited at that. I don't know why, because it's so obvious as soon as he's going to do it, but I was like, I was super interested.
So we go from the excitement of that to a two-part story, episode 21, No Way, 463 people disappeared, and episode 22, we did it, 463 people found.
No Way, the two-parter isn't as good as the rest of the series.
Yeah. They investigate missing passengers on a space flight, and then they find the missing passengers because they weren't actually on the space flight they thought they were on. Then they get captured by actual hijackers, because the hijackers turned out to be the kid of two space flight accident investigators who would split up, and he was trying to get them his parents back together by having them investigate these missing passengers. But then actual hijackers turned up at the end, and Yuri and Mugi and the robot who doesn't appear enough in the second half for me to remember his name, Nano, there you go, have to rescue them while Kay delays their execution by putting on a massive amount of makeup. which is probably
I like that scene.
The best joke in this two-parter.
Yeah.
Oh, and also, who's going to show this kid her boobs at some point?
Oh, I think it's Kay. Yeah. I think it's Kay.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's Kay says that this will cheer him up, and she was going to literally undo her top.
See, this is why Yuri's the better character. Because
I don't know how old the kid is meant to be, but
he's not old enough.
Not
to
of
be
age, nowhere near.
No.
Dealing with those two.
Kay in particular.
Kay in particular, exactly.
Yes. Because she has no shame. But it's because no. She does it again later on in the final episode. Not to a kid, but to an adult. But she uses it as a distraction. I mean, this is fine, but the pacing feels, because it's a two-parter, feels off compared to the rest of the series.
It could have been a one-parter. They could have had a different story that lasted two parts. I think this could have been quite easily wrapped up in one, because I think, if I remember correctly, the entire first part is purely about the mystery of the hijack, but it's all extremely slow-paced.
Yeah, because they're kind of having to do detective work rather than running around shooting things. And it's kind of obvious watching what's gone on. You just take, and I think they're always on the right trail. It's not like they're following red herrings, but they're just being disturbingly thorough for the dirty pair to get an answer. Then, in episode 23, we get Something's Amiss, Our Elegant Revenge. Going against orders, Yuri teams with a notorious con man to deal with the drug baron Mahogany. So at the start of the episode, they're about to take down this Mahogany when they get called off. And they get chased by the guy's security. Yuri ends up getting injured but rescued by this con man. And she teams up with him to run a con on this guy to get all his money off him. But then, of course, the con man's also ruining a con on the dirty pair, but the dirty pair are wise to this, so by the end of the episode, they've captured him and Mahogany.
I really like this one. I think this was another one of my favourites. I think the con set up, the scenes with the con, I thought were actually quite good.
Yeah, the con is much better written than, say, the mysteries have been. It all sort of plays out nicely. There's like little bits where they're like, oh, is it going to go wrong? Oh, no, we can use this guy's greed to cover up the tiny holes in our plot.
Yeah.
And also the fact that Mahogany is one of these cons where they're relying on it making it appear that they've mistaken Mahogany for somebody else. And so Mahogany is getting this chance of getting in on a deal that he shouldn't be getting in on, so he can't... He can't reveal too much himself, so he's trying to cover up at the same time, which allows them to pull the wool over his eyes more easily. And it's great that in every single situation, Kay is having to be the one in disguise.
As a man.
In every situation.
And they're very deceiving as well. Yeah.
Sorry, Anthony, I was going to say, the scene when Kay, I think, was the barman, I didn't twig it was Kay.
Same. I thought it was a character that we'd be introduced. I blinked. I didn't remember them, and it was Kay.
Yeah, and there's loads of points at where the guy, if he wasn't so greedy, would be suspicious. But it's always leading him to something where his greed takes over. Like when they lure him to that weird the very start where their office is in this completely run-down place and it's just hastily painted on a door. But then it opens up to this gold corridor, and then it's like, oh yeah, of course. Now he thinks, I mean, this is all.
It's not even painted on a door. It's the little robot holding the sign.
Oh yeah, that's the first sign. But when they go in the building,
they
just get this door which looks rusted and with a hastily painted whatever company they're pretending to be is. But the idea is that that's all a cover for what they actually are. But I love this episode as well. It's a lot of fun, and it's the type of story I like. I like these con-type stories.
It's a blur for me, this one. I remember the gold, and I remember some of the outfits, but I remember that dude, obviously the Conan, but little else.
Then we get the last episode that was aired on TV, Are you serious? A condo is a dangerous place to live. In which the lovely angels act as bait for a door-to-door salesman serial killer.
Love it.
This is where, as we said at the start, this feels like where they were going off schedule. I think they used a different animation company than they normally use for most of these episodes. So everyone looks slightly off-model.
I think, doesn't it open with, like,
Yuri in the shower?
Which seems very odd, considering that they'd kind of made a point of covering them up for the rest of the season.
Yeah,
you get a bit of nipple as well, don't you?
Yeah, it's... But the story's still good, because basically they just keep on getting these door-to-door salesmen coming into their house.
And none of them leave. None of them ever get asked to leave either.
No. So the first one's a guy who's selling knives, and he's very suspicious.
Laser knives.
And hasn't he always got these...
He knew it wasn't going to be him, because it's two.
And he's got all these stories which make him seem like he's going to be a serial killer.
Yeah.
Then it is the bra salesman who is actually a thief. Oh, no, he's the guy who looks like he's out of a manga. That's the guy they say. You're right, Anthony. This is the guy where they say he's so good looking he looks out of a manga.
I know my dirty pair.
There you go.
Is it the laser knife guy that's got a prosthetic finger?
It is, yes. Yeah.
Which he's got a great story that we never find out.
Yes, which you can make dance. So this guy is... which they take care of him by... he's selling these special electrified bras to stop gropers, and they end up weaponizing it against him. And then, like, a 12-year-old boy shows up. Who hates women. Just constantly talking about how much he hates women.
He's blind as well, isn't he?
He's blind as well, yes.
Yeah.
Is he... Yeah, okay. The clue all through this, Mugi and Nana are playing chess on the floor, which is the key to them figuring out what's gone on by the end. So they got all these guys here, and then... Do they call the cop, or does the cop come round on his own?
No, he just
the
comes
cop's
around,
coming round.
Yeah, so
he just turns up as well.
Turns out the cop investigating the serial killing is actually the serial killer. Well, one of the serial killers, because it turns out there's two serial killers, and they're killing people in certain numbers and floors and letters, which match up to positions on a chessboard. So it's actually two serial killers having a chess game through murdering people.
I love it.
All very intricate. It was very cool when they were explaining exactly how the I think, is it the 8x8, the chessboard?
Yes, yeah.
And matching it up to the apartment windows. It was, yeah, I thought that kind of the reveal, I thought that was quite cool.
Yeah.
It's Yuri that susses it as well.
Yeah.
She's the best.
it's a good episode, even though everything's slightly off model. But I think it's just so wacky with the mystery's good, with the solving of the mystery at the end is good, but the appeal is of these three wacky door-to-door salesmen, because they had a...
Yeah,
I think they're each trying to stitch each other up and blame each other as trying to point the finger as the other one being the killer as well.
And the fact that none of them leave, as you say, adds to the comedy.
Yeah.
Well, because they're all
every time
well.
The doorbell goes, you're like, oh, who's arriving next? No, I really enjoyed this. It was another one of my favourites.
Yeah, okay, the doorbell, that was the... I now remember what that reminds me of. I don't think I knew at the time, is the Clue movie.
Yes. That's a great film.
It is. Because that quite... As later on in the film, they're constantly... People are arriving at the door and getting killed.
Ooh. I need to rewatch that film, and I always recommend it to people. And people are—I don't know why—but they seem easy put off.
Yeah, it wasn't popular at the time, but I've always, as soon as I saw it on TV, probably 14 or something, I guess. 14, 15, because it was 85, so it normally took like 4 years for a movie to get to the TV. I've always enjoyed it. It's got loads of people I really like in it. It's Tim Curry, Madeline Kahn, Christopher Lloyd, Michael McKean, Martin Mull, Leslie Ann Warren, and Eileen Brennan.
You had me at Tim Curry and Christopher Lloyd.
And you get a lot of Tim Curry. He is definitely the lead character in the thing.
I love. I think it was you that recommended it to me.
Oh, maybe.
Brian. And I watched it and I was like, wow. And I think I watched it again the next day. I was so into it.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it would have been like in the movies where, in the actual cinema, where they only give you one of the endings and it was a random ending.
Rough. Because you couldn't go on YouTube those days. You couldn't get that post-credit scene.
Because the idea would be that you'd be discussing with your friends and then you'd be like, hang on, that wasn't the ending I saw.
What's the word I'm looking for? Like, how did that occur? Was it like screening to screening, or like state to state, town to town?
I don't know. I've no idea. Or maybe how much it occurred anyway.
It's very exciting though.
Yeah, I guess if it's just a reel, if it's just like the final reel, you could give all three reels to the cinema and you could just mix them up.
Oh, per screen. Yeah.
I'm not going to read them because I've not seen the film, and I should probably watch it. But it apparently, according to Wikipedia at least, it just says the audiences were shown the endings at random. But apparently ending C is the proper ending. One or two are possible endings.
Yeah.
Because on the version I watched, it has the first two and then the last one ties it off in a great way.
It's kind of like, here's how it could have happened.
Here's what actually happened.
And then the final one is like, here's what actually happened. Yeah, that's how you'll see it on DVD and if it's on TV.
I have to make a point of checking it out, because if it's that sort of vibe, I'll probably really enjoy that.
And it's around this time as well, so maybe that was a little bit.
Oh, the one thing we didn't mention was the bird and the use of the sugar to reveal the culprit.
Oh, yes, because they have a bird which they... It's at the start of the episode, we're told it's Yuri's boyfriend's bird, but then they pretend that it's a bird of one of the victims, and they're let free, and they've spilt sugar on the guy they suspect is the murderer already. And so it goes for him.
And they just want to see his reaction when he pulls out the weapon, and that confirms, because they don't know for certain.
No.
It's him at that stage.
Yeah, that is a good. That's also a good detective move. And then we get the two episodes which were released later. Episode 25, Eek! The boy in the manor is a Terminator.
Literally.
So Kay is not teamed up with Yuri on this episode. She is teamed up with Calico, Ghoulie's right-hand man, who assures her that he's fully trained as a field operative. And they've just got to go and arrest a counterfeiter. But he has come with, like, all the weapons in the world. Kind of make the dirty pair look under-equipped on all the previous episodes.
It's like a sort of Rambo.
It is. It makes you wonder,
down to the bandana.
Are all three WA operatives as gung-ho as the dirty pair are? Well, maybe not, because we see the older guy in the first... at the start of the series. Just maybe when they're younger, they all go absolutely nuts for blowing shit up.
I think if I remember correctly, the reason that Yuri's not there, isn't it because she has a date?
Yes.
And Kay is actually genuinely being nice and saying, I won't disturb Yuri. I'm going to let her live out her youth or something like that, she says.
Yes, she goes on a terrible date with a guy who just can't stop talking about this woman in a book he's reading.
She gets annoyed.
Yeah, so she gets annoyed and dumps him mid-date and goes to the office and discovers that Kay's off on a mission. But she has to go to their rescue when they get caught by the counterfeiter because his base is fully equipped with robots. And it turns out he was counterfeiting money to get revenge on the bank that had caused his son to commit suicide. He's also built a robot double of his son, who is the Terminator of the title. And basically, they blackmail Calico into letting the counterfeiter and his wife go at the end of the episode.
Yeah, because apparently they're both very, very nice, despite the fact that their house is a death trap and full of killer robots.
Yes. basically just say how great... They'll say how great Calico was in the field, rather than say how he actually was.
Yep.
And basically, they'll dress it up so he, when he goes for a promotion, it will look good for him.
That's right.
And then in the last episode, it's... Yeah, go for it. Gary.
Sorry, Brian. I was just going to say one thing we've got to mention about episode 25 is the chef robot.
Oh, yes.
That scene when Kay comes through the window and she thinks, oh, no, I've been caught by this robot. And the robot's like, what would you like for dinner? So then she comes up with this elaborate recipe. And then that chef robot spends the rest of the episode making that recipe and then serves it. That was very cool.
Yeah, that was a good, like, completely unnecessary gag, but...
But yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it works. Yeah, episode 26, really? For beautiful women, canon is the key word to escape. So, the 3WA security force go mutinous, and they hold Eleanor City and Ghouli hostage. So, despite orders not to do so, because they're just going to blow up the rest of the 3WA board, are just going to blow the mountain up where this cannon, I can't remember what it's called now, it's Heaven? It's a thing they shouldn't have built, is all
I
know.
Was it called, like, the God Cannon? Yeah, it was
God Cannon.
That was it, the God Cannon. My notes said the God Cannon.
Yes, because it's the thing which, it would make more sense if, like in the books, they were a public service. Rather than the private mercenary company they are in the anime. It's like, why would this company build this doomsday weapon? Whereas if they're like an official, like, government-funded organization, yes, it makes more sense that they're in charge of this planetary prevention, planetary protection weapon. Yeah, so they're just going to blow the mountain where this weapon's stored up, killing Ghouli and the security force. But Dirty Pair are like, no, Ghouli's been great, invited us to that party that time. They don't say that, but that's the main interaction we've seen in that episode. So they decide they're going to go into action and break him free and stop the security force, destroy the cannon. But they keep on running up with problems where they can't quite... they can't quite go along with the same plan each time, but eventually they sort of trust each other. They go their separate ways, but both of their plans sort of complement each other in the end. And there's a great shot where it looks like Kay's been caught, and the guy, the head of the security force, brings up the God Cannon, but then Yuri's hiding inside the barrel of the God Cannon
with a gun.
Pow. Yeah,
that was an awesome scene, awesome payoff.
And, yeah, they fire Ghouli off in an escape pod. And how exactly do they escape the mountain when it blows
up? Shoot the God Cannon at the interior of the building and hope that the God Cannon itself does not blow up from the explosion.
That's it, yes.
Easy peasy.
Yeah,
and we see Kay's survived at the end, and she's, like, devastated, thinking Yuri's died, but it's quite clear that she's underneath the bit of metal that Kay's standing on.
Because it's not even drawn in a way that is the same as the background, so you know it's going to move.
Have you ever seen the clip from, I think it's like the Blue Seed OVAs, where there's a gag about how, oh, don't tread on that bit of ground, it's drawn differently to the rest of the scenery.
Oh, really?
But then it turns out it was a trick. It was actually the bit which did look like the rest of the background was where the trap was.
Oh.
They used to be on YouTube. I've never seen them in the context of... I think they were OVAs, or they were like extras you got on the laser discs.
Yeah.
Like just goofy sketches which are like non-canon. But yeah, there's definitely... They did that gag of like... If you watched a lot of cartoons, you notice like... Oh, you've got the background paintings, but then there'll be objects on the background, not in the same style. There you go. Okay, something's going to happen with that object. Which, yeah, I definitely watched I think I'd figured that out quite early from just watching so many cartoons as a child.
Yeah, same.
But you're fine.
It's a blessing and a curse.
You go along with it. That's what you pay for. Yeah, this is a good episode. It's weird to see like the 3WA sort of... There's like this corrupt part of it. But they make for decent villains.
Oh, they do, yeah. Absolutely.
And it's not quite clear if a bunch of guys we've met in the previous episodes have got killed.
Guess we'll never know.
Guess we'll never know. No. Well, unless they show up in the OVAs.
Oh, yeah, that's a point.
Because we still have to watch those. That's all we've got left. Yep. And then we can watch Dirty Pair Flash.
Oh, God.
Whoa!
Don't you have to watch Dirty Pair Flash?
There's people out there who prefer Dirty Pair Flash to the original.
Those people are wrong. But I respect their opinion. But they're wrong.
I think they're also younger than me and you, Gary.
Okay. Youth is...
I'm going to love it.
You may love it, Anthony, yes.
You probably will.
We'll see. Do you like Tenchi Muyo?
What I saw, I thought, yeah.
Not that I'm saying it's like Tenchi Muyo, but the character designs are closer to that style than this 80s style. We shall find out when we do Tenchi Muyo in an upcoming episode. I remember liking Tenchi Muyo. I'll see whether that...
I was going to say, I remember enjoying it, but it's been quite a few
years.
Well,
I should strictly say I enjoyed the first 7 episodes of Tenchi Muyo.
That's probably more than I've seen.
There's the first 6 episodes of the first OVA series, and then it's like the Mihoshi special. But then I bought the second OVA series, and I did not get on with that. But that's a discussion for the Tenchi Muyo podcast.
Yeah, spoilers. When are we actually doing that? Because now you've got me worried in case I've got to smash through Muyo.
I haven't lined it up yet. We've got to figure out what we're doing next and who's free. But hey, that was Dirty Pair TV taken care of for a second time. It was good stuff. I highly recommend it. You should go and buy it.
Definitely. Second that.
Or watch it on YouTube, because it may still be on YouTube.
Tisk, tisk.
No,
I think it was one of those things where Dirty Pair was one of the first animes I had on VHS as a teenager, so there was that element of, I wonder if this will still be as good as I remember thinking it was as a teenager. And then I watched it and I was like, yeah, this is still as good as I remember it being, and it's it's one of those shows that I still enjoy, so it's been great.
Now, I think if you're in America, or you can pretend to be in America, then I do believe maybe it's just the first 2 episodes are up. Looks by looks of things at the moment. On the Zomi.
Well, I guess you can see if you like it.
Yeah.
Use that as an excuse to try it out.
Try it, you might like it. There's other things on there. One of which people wanted to do as a podcast, but that might wait till next year. Okay, that is that bit of the podcast taken care of. Now let's play the game that we've already played, so technically you should already know the best answers.
Just so we know how I smashed this.
You did first time round, and Gary could not have done it any worse.
I was going to say, I kind of smashed it in...
In the opposite direction.
If we were playing Family Fortunes, I would have walked away with the car.
That is true, yes.
Yeah.
But we're not. It's inverted. It's basically the top Ranko, which is what I've ripped off as the quiz. But I feel fine doing that because essentially Pointless kind of ripped off top Ranko as well. But yes, it's the popularity contest where this time we've already done the 1986 Animage Grand Prix. So this time I'm going to do the female characters from 1986. This is the 8th Anime Grand Prix from the June 1986 issue of Animage. So all you got to do is tell me who you think is the lowest ranked in the top 10 of the female characters of 1985 and 1986. Gary
goes first with K, because it's his favourite.
Wait, I didn't pick K.
You did!
No, I didn't. You picked K.
You'd have to pick the same ones. Do we not? Okay, you might want to pick the right answers.
Who I picked? Do I want to try and do better than last time? I guess I should. I will go with... hang on, I probably did pick this one last time, but I'm going to pick it again because I like the name. Gore-ha-li-lissi?
I think that was number 8.
I'm going to tell you, Gary, did not pick that last time because that is number 10. That's 10 points to you, Gary.
Hey, look at that.
I knew it was high up. Right, yes. I'm going to go with Sarayuki from Dankuga.
Okay, Sarayuki from Dankuga. That gets you 8 points. She was in 8th place.
Okay, cool.
Back to you, Gary, for your second guess.
I'm now trying to remember which of... I think I picked one of the dirty pair, but not both. But I have a feeling both of them were in the top 5 anyway. I will go with Yuri and see where Yuri goes.
Okay, you can get 2 points for that one. She was number 2 in the top 10.
Thank God. I'm going to go with Mai Kazuki, Magical Star, Magical Emmy.
Okay, Mai Kazuki from Magical Star, Magical Emmy. That gets you 9 points, Anthony.
There we go. Now we're talking. Nice.
Final one for you, Gary. Final one for you.
Yeah, let's... I'll go with... Sarah Crewe from Princess Sarah.
Sarah Crewe from Princess Sarah. That gets you 6 points.
Oh, shit.
Takes you to 18. Now, Anthony can technically draw if he completely pulls it up. No, you'll win otherwise. The worst you can do is draw.
Oh, okay. Can I just, like, delete off... Oh, no, I can see which ones we've done. Sarah Yuki. Sarah Crewe. Which one was it? Oh, it must be for Murasami from Mobile Suit Zed Gundam.
Oh, we have to go for another round because that draws with Gary.
No,
number one was for Murasami.
No,
wow.
Yes, with 2,030 votes.
The last time we did this quiz.
Okay, we have to go to fourth round, Gary.
I hate this.
Ooh, we've not had. Oh, have we had Minami Asakura from Touch?
We have not had Minami Asakura from
Touch. Oh, I think that makes him win, doesn't it?
That gets you 5 points. Okay, Anthony.
I need number 7, don't I?
You need number 7 to win.
Right, I'm...
It's got to be...
Oh, nice. My gosh. Let me just delete some of the... Can I just do this next to the ones we've had? I'm writing bullshit next, I'm trying to see. Is that right? So we've had 1, 2, 3, 4. That's not right.
No, you got
the ball. No, because you've not done it against Sarah Crewe.
Yeah.
Right, that's what we're working with.
No, there's another one left. Another one you...
Just pick one.
Which one else has been picked?
Yuri's been picked.
Oh, God. Oh, I seem to think Creamy Mommy is super popular. But what a... Oh, shit.
You've got a 2 in 3 chance of getting... Of beating me, is that right, I think?
No, 1 in 3 chance.
Oh.
Creamy Mommy.
Creamy Mommy. Okay, that is number 7. You win again, yes, Anthony. Yes, yes.
It feels good. Stop feeling good, I tell you. It's like a drug.
Well, at least I did better that time.
Winning.
It feels great, yeah.
Righto, that is this episode taken care of for a second time. Anthony, any plugs?
Best bet is Twitch. I was going to say Twitter. Twitch is AntAskew. Go watch me play. I'm playing Death's Gambit at the moment. Very good game. And also Twitter is also AntAskew. So go there.
Okay. Anything to plug from you, Gary?
You can find me at most gaming haunts at Chidamaru. That's Chidamaru with a C-H-I. Other than that, I use my real name on Twitter because somebody stole my handle. And that's about it.
And you can find me on Twitter at awesome_engine. And you should come to HabanaCon in November. I should really remember the dates. Second to the fourth, yes. Not the 5th.
If it's not sold out when I get out of surgery, I will probably register myself.
It won't be sold out.
Because I'll be running stuff.
I mean that the nice way.
It's in Milton Keynes, so fairly central if you live below
if you live
Birmingham.
In the south.
Yes.
Yes. It's a bit shit for me. I'll tell you that for free.
It's not great for me, and I live quite near it. If I wanted to take public transport, it's 2.5 hours.
It's 4 hours, 20 minutes for me.
Whereas on a drive, it's an hour and a quarter, or possibly an hour and a half, hour 40, depending on what the traffic's like. But yeah, it's a ridiculously roundabout route.
Yeah,
to get there.
Great location for the fact there's like food, like so many food options.
Yes.
Yeah, all you could want for food options.
Yeah, within spitting distance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You do have to leave that, like, whatever meter area.
Though
is.
We still did go for a bit of a hike to find a Wagamama's.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, so come along to that. It'll be a fun old time. And that's it for this week on Dynamite in the Brain. If you liked it, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast aggregator of choice. Next week on the show, I'm going to make a executive decision right now. It'll be Detroit Metal City. Goodbye.
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 Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.